Welcome back to our Thursday Night Live. Frankie here. Today I'm alone, and today we have a very, very interesting topic to talk about, right? So today is the 30th of November, and tomorrow we will start the last month of the year. And usually, December is the time of the year whereby all the investors will sort of review how they have done in the past 1 year in terms of their investments, and then see where they have done wrong, where they have done well. And then they picked up those lessons that they have learned, and then they apply it in the following year, right? And it's also the time of the year where people will start to build up the narrative for the next year. If this is what happened in 2023, how much of it is going to be carried forward to 2024? And how much can we predict what will happen in 2024? From there, then what the experts would usually do is they will forecast the index target. So like, let's say, for example, S&P 500 today is about 4,000 over points, right? So if, let's say, they assume that next year the economy is going to grow by 4%, then they what they will do is they probably add 4% to the 4,000 S&P 500 points. So that would be the benchmark. And then based on the number, then it will trickle down to say, okay, then which economic sector is going to be the driver in order for S&P 500 to reach that number. So it is a very delicate approach to analyze the market and try to somehow find an angle to invest so that at least they have a direction to follow and not just blindly, like, close eyes, throw that and see which stocks to buy, and then they just follow, right? And to add difficulty to that is that, you know, 2023 has been a very, very weird, very strange year for stocks. Why do I say that? Is because with all the happenings that happened throughout the past 11 months, everything has been pointing negative. But for some reason, right, stocks, well, they are sort of on a bull run again to a certain extent. And all these S&P 500, Dow Jones Index, NASDAQ Index, they are all reaching, they try to challenge the new high again, which is something that I will go through later. We will do a review of what happened in 2023. And then we will see how much of that is going to carry forward to 2024. But before I go into that, right, just want to ask, how many of you actually made money in 2023, given all the economic challenges that we have faced so far? If you have made money in 2023, maybe you can type a 1 in the comment box. And if you lose money, it's a little bit unfortunate, but maybe you don't mind to share with us also, you can type a 2 in the comment box so that we know you lose money in 2023. And we will try to discuss and see what were the areas that you predicted wrongly, and could we change the course for you, and next year, 2024, you could do better. Suddenly, this one sounds like a feng shui talk. We try to predict what will happen in 2024 and how to make money, right? But my guess is most of us would have made money in the stock market, especially if your main investment, your main portfolio is in the US stocks. For Malaysia market, it's kind of boring. You probably make money from dividends, right? Malaysia is popular for being a dividend kind of market. But apart from that, unless you are a very good stock picker and you have subscribed to some of the IPOs and you manage to get those shares, then yeah, maybe your performance will be slightly better than most of us. At least for me, I didn't get any of the IPO stocks, so I didn't get to enjoy that Malaysian market excitement lah. So most of my stocks are, maybe later I will also share with you guys what are my stocks of the year, right? And whether I will still keep those stocks going forward into 2024. Okay, so let's do a quick revision of what happened in 2023. The biggest theme in 2023 is no other than interest rate hike. In the past 40 years, we have never seen the central bank in America raising interest rate that aggressively. From close to 0% all the way to today, we are at 5.25%, right? That is, I don't know, by any measurement and by any prediction, right, the whole market will have collapsed already if you increase something from 0% to 5%. Because number one, right, US is not a country where they are enjoying, account surplus. Account surplus means they are making more money than they spend. In fact, because US is involved in a lot of all this geopolitical tension in the past, right? They were in argument with China, and then they are not in very good condition with Russia, and then you have all this turmoil happening in the Middle East and all that. And America being the taiko, right? Apart from being apart from having to jaga their own backyard, they would also need to lend a hand to all these people outside of their country to show that it is a humanitarian intervention to help people outside of US so that everyone can live peacefully. So that has always been part of the UN agenda, and US being the taiko in the UN, so they play a very big role in that. And in order to play a big role, everything is money, right? So they need to spend a lot of money overseas to help other countries to solve their problem. They also need a lot of money to solve their internal problem, which is inflation. So that has been going on in the US, right? And when the Fed decided to raise the interest rate from 0% to 5%, and the US debt today is $33 trillion. $33 trillion. Just imagine 1% of $33 trillion. That's how much? $3 trillion, $300 billion. So if I'm not mistaken, it's $300 billion. So if you guys got calculator, you can help me to check and see whether the figure is correct. But if 1% is $300 billion, 5% you times 5, so it's $1.5 trillion worth of interest only. Interest that they need to service every year. So 2023 is the first year that they need to service that amount. If 2024, the Fed say they're going to keep the interest rate higher for longer, then next year they will probably need to pay the same amount of money. Then the first challenge would be, how would the US going to find that $1 trillion to pay only the interest? We are not even talking about the principal yet. It's just on the interest only. So that's on the country level. At the personal level, right, things are not doing very well as well. In fact, it kind of mimics the US economy. Now, why do I say that? It's because throughout this 2023, we all just came out from pandemic, a full force of an economic run, right? And all these people have all this impulsive spending. So they've been spending and spending, and a lot of all these households, they have sort of already stretched their credit card limits, right? Because they want to buy new things, you know, they have been locked down for so long and they just want to do something, right? Go holiday and whatnot. And if you recall, right, just last week we had the Black Friday sales in the US. It recorded $9.8 billion worth of online sales. So that was a record in the US, which is fantastic, right? Stocks like Amazon, stocks like all the logistics companies, they all enjoy a very good rally on that day because of that Black Friday online sales. But if you look deeper into the details, right, 79 million of all these sales were actually done via buy now, pay later. Now, personally, in my opinion, there are only two reasons why you will use buy now, pay later. Number one is that maybe all these e-commerce websites, they say, if you use my buy now, pay later facilities, I'm going to throw you more discounts. Maybe you get 5% discount higher than if you use other banks Punya credit card, right? So that's one possibility that people use buy now, pay later. But the second reason, and I think that is probably going to be the main reason, is because, number one, no more cash. Obviously, no more cash. If not, they wouldn't be using their credit cards, right? Even their credit cards, the limits is stretched. So when all your credit limit is being exhausted, the next option will be buy now, pay later. And this 79 million worth of buy now, pay later in that one day sales was 47% higher compared to 2020. So meaning to say people are spending more and people are spending over their affordability. All right, this is very scary because if they cannot pay back this amount in 2024, and we all know buy now, pay later, the interest rate is so much higher compared to credit cards and all that, right? Because the risk of not getting paid back is very high. So, yeah, if all these consumers, they buy already and they are not able to pay back and it goes into 2024, number one, a lot of consumers are going to default, right? And we are talking about, record sales in October, but by March, April next year, everyone is going to suffer. Now, when all these people suffer, they are not paying back the money that they owe. The first industry that's going to get affected, who can tell me the answer? Type it in the comment box. It's a very easy question, right? Who do you borrow your money from? Okay, lah, maybe your fingers are a little bit more tired today. Let me tell you the answer, right? The answer is banks, law, right? Banks are the one who actually lend money to people to spend, right? And banks are being instructed by the central bank to say, because I want my economy to grow, I want my economy to spin faster, so please lend more money to the people. And that's what they do. They will lend the money to the people. But when they cannot pay, number one, you will have new problems for the bank. And we already seen what happened to the bank in March this year. Silicon Valley Bank and all these, all the other banks that collapsed at the beginning of the year, right? Why they collapsed is because they invested a lot of money into investment products. And as interest rate went up, all their investments had a very huge paper loss. And that led to people worry that all these banks, they have not enough cash in the bank to sustain that kind of paper loss. So they started to withdraw money from the bank. When enough people go and withdraw money from the bank will fall into crisis. So that was the crisis in 2023. Now, we all know that the real estate, the commercial real estate in the US is facing a problem. There are a lot of vacancies, right? And all these vacancies means that all the landlords will have to pay their mortgage from their own pocket rather than waiting for their tenants to pay them. So that is one stress over there already. Yeah? On top of that, you have a bunch of consumers who spend so much in 2023, but they cannot pay back the money in 2024. So commercial real estate got problem, consumer banking got problem. When interest rate is so high, right, a lot of businesses who already borrowed money from the bank, they are also suffering from high interest payment throughout 2023. And in 2024, it's going to be the same. Now, if people are not going to spend in 2024 because they already spent all the money now, chances are the profits of businesses is going to be bad in 2024. So when they are bad in 2024, the business, the corporate banking segment of the for the bank will also be affected. And we all know that the whole banking sector only have that few segment, right? You have the consumer segment, you have the property segment, and then you have the corporate segment. If three also not doing well, yeah. So what will 2024 look like? So that is my biggest worry in the US. And why as a Malaysian I talk about US so much is because a lot of all these US big banks, they have investments all around the world, including Malaysia. Now, when they are in trouble, the first thing that they are going to do is to repatriate back all the money overseas back to the US, right? Just like what Malaysia did during the Asian financial crisis as well. In order to peg the ringgit to 380 to a dollar, one of the things that we have done is also to repatriate back all the ringgit back to Malaysia in order to support our currency. So in order to support the banking system in America, I suspect, I cannot say they are going to do it. I suspect they are going to take back all the money overseas and go back to the US to support their banking system. If that is still not enough, then we're probably going to see a real crisis in 2024. So that is the biggest danger that I can sense based on my personal opinion. But my personal opinion is just myself alone, and I'm nobody in this whole entire planet, right? So it's better to look at some of the benchmark and some of the experts and see what they say as well. So I went through a few global investment banks punya research, and I found some interesting data over here, right? So the first one I want to talk about is IMF. IMF is one of the biggest entities, right? Every day they go and track how the economy is doing and all that. So the IMF baseline forecast for 2023 is that the US economy is going to grow by 3%. 3% on a full year basis. Of course, if you read the most recent report, they say that the US economy, the US GDP grew by 5.2%. That is impressive because even Malaysia also cannot do 5.2%. All right. Now, why I say that is because typically a developing economy, the GDP growth is higher. So China's GDP growth is very high. It's about 6%. Malaysia is a developing economy. We are talking about 4% or 5%. In an advanced economy like Europe or US, typically their growth is 1, 2 or 3%. But the fact that last month, US recorded 5.2%, that is to say that now they are growing like a developing country, which is fantastic. Stock prices went up again. But on a full year basis, IMF is still expecting the US to do 3% in 2023. And in 2024, I think they're a bit optimistic, but their number is 2.9% growth. So it's just 0.1% drop compared to 2023, right? So this is one relief, if you want to believe the IMF number. So that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is that while it only drops by 0.1% forecast in 2024, right? If you track the historical average of US growth forecasted by IMF between 2000 to 2019, so about 19, 20 years, the average GDP growth in the US is about 3.8%. So you are talking about an average of 3.8% against their latest forecast of 2.9% in 2024. Now, whether we are going to get a crisis or not in 2024, that one, time will tell. But the fact that IMF is estimating such a big drop from 3.8 to 2.9% in 2024 means that the economy is going to slow down in the US. So that's one report, right? The other report, JP Morgan. Let's look at JP Morgan. JP Morgan is targeting the S&P 500 to drop by 8% in 2024 using today's price. 8%. Actually, that's a lot of money. Now, if you think you put 100 ringgit into the S&P 500 ETF, right? By the end of the year, you're going to lose 8% of your money, right? Might as well put the money in ETF or some money market fund and whatnot, right? You are going to get more money than that. So this is JP Morgan's forecast. Why they're expecting an 8% decline is because they think that the global growth is going to decelerate. It's not going to be as vibrant as during the pandemic and the time when we just came out from pandemic when everyone was spending and everyone was catching up with the lost 2 years of the virus attack, right? So global growth decelerate. Now, one more thing we already discussed just now is household savings has shrunk, right? To the point where people need to use buy now, pay later to spend instead of using their own pocket money. And the other part is geopolitical tension. Apparently, JP Morgan thinks that there's going to be more chaos in the world moving forward. But hopefully, that one doesn't happen. So that is JP Morgan's forecast. Now, there's another interesting investment bank's finding over here. And this bank is from Europe, Deutsche Bank from Germany. Their argument here is that with the interest rate going up, the economy will not immediately react to it. Simply because, let's say, for example, Bank Negara say, I want to increase Malaysian interest rate to 10%. Tomorrow, is it going to change your life? It's not going to change your life. But 3 months down the road, is it going to be a life-changing event for you? The answer is yes. Number one, if you bought a house on mortgage, immediately the bank is going to tell you that, hey, your interest rate is 10%, so please pay up, right? But your salary haven't changed, huh? Number two, if you have a car, you know, bank is going to tell you, hey, interest rate 10%, huh? Quickly pay up. And again, your salary hasn't changed, right? And all these things is going to add up together and you will feel the pinch somewhere in the future, but not today. So again, all these investment banks, they like to look at history. So based on history, they look at the past 13 interest rate hike cycles that has been done in the US throughout the last 100 years or so, right? There have been 13 times of it. So out of these 13 times, only one time when the Fed increased the interest rate and it followed by a recession after 18 months from the first time the interest rate went up. That was the only time. The rest of the times was after 18 months. And today, right now, 30th of November 2023, we are exactly 20th month from the first time the Fed has increased interest rate. So what I'm trying to say here is that if history always repeats itself, right, we are already in the range where most of the time when the Fed increases interest rate, a recession will come because we're in the 20th month. And if that is going to happen in 2024, then we should get ready for rainy days now. We still have one month to prepare ourselves. And I believe this 1 month is going to be quite a positive month in the stock market because, you know, looking at things, I think the market is trying to close the year high. In fact, I think the first half of 2024, the market will still try to cushion it a little bit because 2024 has this interesting catalyst of US election. We all know that during an election year, the government wouldn't want the stock market to look very bad. Investors also don't want to see a very bad stock market. So chances are, I think the first half of the year, still okay, but standing on thin ice. All we need is just one small little spark, right? It's going to have a domino effect and the whole economy is going to trickle down. But hopefully that doesn't happen. But my point here is that we are standing on thin ice in 2024. Even though for the first half of the year, I think there's a chance for the market to continue to go up a little bit more. Right? So Deutsche Bank expects a mild recession in 2024. And the reason for that is because there's a lagging effect on this interest rate hike. But now, with the interest rate going up so high already, right, we start to see inflation to come down. That's good news. But in my opinion, next year's theme is still inflation. Then you'll be asking why, right? Okay. So my reasoning is this. Next year's inflation is not because of interest rate. It's not because all these central banks keep printing money and then people got a lot of money, they buy, push the price up. No. Next year's inflation is going to come from two things. One is driven by food prices, and number two is driven by governments. Governments in terms of food security, food protectionism. Okay, number one. Not sure if you guys are aware that we are currently in this weather condition called El Nino, right? El Nino is a phenomenon where we experience a long period of drought, that means no rain. And when this happens, it will affect your crop harvest, right? Because too little rain, right? Too little rain means very little fruits. Very little fruits to harvest means maybe not enough food to eat, lah. So that is something that is happening in the world today. You may not feel it, but if you go to the supermarket to do your groceries, you probably see prices going up already. And that's because El Nino has affected the harvest of a lot of food. And this El Nino is going to be even stronger in 2024, apparently, right? I don't look at weather, so I'm not too sure. And because food harvest is being affected right now, a lot of all these countries, they are trying to protect themselves from over-exporting their food overseas to the point that they cannot support their own domestic demand. To give you an example, India is one of the world's largest producers of rice, right? But today, India has already banned rice export outside of India. So rice prices has already increased. Not sure whether you feel it or not, but for me, I felt it, right? Number two, Thailand. Thailand is world number three largest raw sugar producer. And that day I went to MSM briefing and they are saying that they kind of expect Thailand to somehow have policies to curb sugar export as well because their harvest is also being affected, right? So sugar, rice, and all these basic food items, they are all experiencing a shortage. And this shortage is going to be the main reason for inflation in 2024. So if that plays out to what I described, next year will be a year where we will have high interest rate, high inflation. The consequence is only one. We will not have enough money as a consumer to save, to spend, to invest. So 2024 is not a very nice year to be in. That is my opinion. Yes, that situation of high interest rate and high inflation is called stagflation. You are correct, Eugene. But where was I? Okay, inflation. So those two are the main reasons for inflation next year. The only way to bring this inflation down is the weather turns better. But this El Nino thing, in the past, it will take about 6 months, 9 months, sometimes even 12 to 16 months to play out. And we are in the middle of it. So at least for the first half of the year, we will continue to get lesser rainfall overall, generally, not in Malaysia, Malaysia everyday rain, which is also very weird because, sometimes of the year where we expect it to be dry, suddenly everyday rain. And then some season where we think that it's going to rain every day, then becomes very dry. So the climate these days is just crazy, right? And I think that's part of the reason why it affected all these crops harvest as well. Well, anyway, those are the macro situation that I sort of write it down myself in my own personal note and try to develop a story of what could happen in 2024 and what I can do there. Before I talk about what I personally have prepared myself for 2024, maybe let's just come back to Malaysia a bit and have a recap of Malaysia's situation. Is there any opportunity that we can look at in Malaysia? And then only I tell you what I do, okay? So for Malaysia in 2023, I think the biggest event is our number one salesman, right? Our number one salesman is our PMX. Every day he fly. But every day he fly, he will bring back billion in terms of FDI, foreign direct investments. So all these investments are not just talk only, right? In the past, they will just sign MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, and say, okay, I will come to Malaysia to invest, let's say, 5 billion ringgit. But at the end of the day, they will come up with another letter to say that, oh, after some research, we find that Malaysia is not very suitable. So we will KIV, maybe next year we come back again. So last time is like that. But this time, all these companies that say that they want to come to Malaysia, they are all committed investments. So that is something very impressive to our salesmen. So next year is going to be an, I call it implementation year, whereby all these FDI, after they committed their investments, they will start to come to Malaysia to execute their project. So maybe they will start to buy land, maybe they will start to build their factories, or maybe they will start to hire their core team members in Malaysia. Just like how Tesla came to Malaysia. When they come to Malaysia, it's not like the next day all the Tesla just pop up from nowhere, right? They had to find a headquarter in Cyberjaya. Then they have to find showroom to open. So you have, what you call that? The one in Damansara there. Pavilion Damansara. So they open a showroom there. And then subsequently, they hired all the important people. So the same process is going to repeat for all the companies that say that they're going to open in Malaysia. So in that sense, I think, in fact, I feel Malaysia maybe there's a chance for ringgit to actually rebound in 2024, simply because all these people are coming. And when they come in, they have to spend in ringgit Malaysia, so they have to sell their US dollar to buy ringgit. When you buy ringgit, ringgit price goes up. Okay, so that's 2024. But where exactly are all these investments going into? To understand that, right, we need to understand what is the component of our economy in 2023 first? Because that will help us to understand how will it shape in 2024. So in 2023, out of the few major industries, right? So we have services, we have manufacturing, we have agriculture, mining, construction. These are the five key areas that comprise in our GDP, right? So service is our biggest sector, about 59.3%, right? So about two-thirds lah. And then we have 23.5% in manufacturing. So these two segments already takes up about 3/4 of our economy already. Then apart from that, we have agriculture. Agriculture, we already discussed just now already, with El Nino, you know, with all these fewer harvests. Maybe in terms of CPO price, it will be better. But whether we are able to harvest enough to capture that price increase or not, that one is a different story. Yeah. So people may speculate and say, hey, CPO price may go up, they buy CPO. But when the result come out and say, hey, actually, I don't have enough palm oil to sell, even though the price is high, then the share price will fall. So those are some of the risks that you need to be aware of in terms of agriculture. Mining is about 6% of GDP. Mining, in this sense, of course, is oil and gas. That is our biggest mineral. And then construction. Construction in 2023, very small, 3.6% only. That is the amount that it contributed to GDP in 2023. Now, in 2024, based on some expert forecasts, the service sector is going to grow by 5.6%. And this is going to be the second largest growth area in Malaysia. I'm not surprised because when all this FDI comes to Malaysia, they need services. They need to hire lawyers. They need to hire accountants. They need to hire engineers. They need to hire blah, 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 blah. Right? And they need to eat here. They need to stay in our hotel and whatnot. All these are services, right? So it's not surprising that services sector is going to be the second largest contributor to GDP in Malaysia in 2024. Manufacturing is the third largest. It's 4.2% growth expected in 2024. Again, not surprising because FDI come in, they need to build. When you build, it will contribute to our manufacturing. But what is the largest? The largest growth area, right, actually kind of surprised me because I didn't really see it in our budget 2024, but it came out in this report that I read. The biggest growth in 2024, according to this report, is construction. 6.8% growth in 2024. Then I started to think, where are all these construction? Property, yeah, there are signs of improving, but not to the point that it is going to be so high that it becomes the biggest growth. But I think all this construction may come from the southern part of Malaysia, so meaning Johor. Why? If you read the news, right, there's going to be LRT there. There's going to be the special financial zone over there. There are just a few infrastructure projects lining up in that Johor area. I think part of the reason is to try to integrate with Singapore and, you know, build some diplomatic relationship over there and then try to be good friends with them. And then also next year we'll have a new king, and the new king also comes from Johor. So it will be nice if we have some of the developments over there. So I think that could be part of the reason why this report says that construction will be one of the areas that we can look at. But those are just food for thought for you to take it back and for you to digest and see whether you want to follow or not. Or if you have other opinions, you can also share it in the comment box and later we will go through it. So it looks like Malaysia is more optimistic compared to the rest of the world. And I think the global fund managers also sense this. And I think they are probably going to be more active in the Malaysian stock market in 2024. Or at least that's what I think, right? Okay, then now comes to my own personal strategy. And this part, disclaimer first, this is not investment advice. And I'm not going to give any stock tips because it is against the regulation. If you agree to whatever that I'm going to say next, please type 3 in the comment box. Then we will continue with whatever that I have to say. Wait and see approach. Oh, very good. But don't wait too long, right? Because stock market react very fast. Nobody agree that this is not the investment advisor. Then cannot continue already. Okay. At least got people reply. Then if regulator asks, then I can show. Oh, if I got number 4. Okay. Personally. First, let me talk about my stock of the year. My stock of the year, I have 3, And all three are US stocks. None of them from Malaysia. My Malaysia stock, like I mentioned just now, is all sitting there for dividend. So nothing to talk about. It's just mediocre. It's just bad. Okay. Quarterly earnings, announced dividend, take. But small money, right? So my stock of the year, I have three. And out of the three, I made video on two of them before. So you all should go and subscribe to the FAQ show because, I like to talk about things that I like, right? And I make it into video. And most of the time, don't talk too much. Yeah, but out of the three, I made content on two of them. One is on Netflix and the other one is Palantir. I think I have these two positions. I have half of my portfolio in just these two stocks. And both of them did very well. For Netflix, I bought it during the crisis where, if you still recall, there was a quarter where they suddenly say they lost subscribers. And then people will panic and say that, hey, you know, with all these YouTubers coming out and all that, you know, people don't watch Netflix anymore, so it's time to sell. So those were the time that I started collecting because they are on a subscription model. It's very hard for people with subscription model to cancel one. And in order for you to subscribe back to Netflix, it's very easy. All they need to do is do Squid Game 2. You will go and reactivate your subscription again. So it's very easy. So because of that, I started accumulating myself. It may not suit your investment style, but I'm just sharing my experience, right? And it did quite well because subsequently the subscription number picked up again. And that was the story that I bought in for 2023. Second one, Palantir. I have always been an advocate of Palantir. And you guys who tune in every week, you would know the reason why I am so into Palantir. It is a big data company and they analyze a lot of AI stuff. And they are getting more and more customers. The most recent contract that they got was from NHS, which is the National Health Service Insurance in UK, right? So if the country is willing to give the entire country's health service contract to an American AI company, and if they're able to do a good job, then maybe other countries may also want to consider to use their service as well. So that's another way to think of it, right? But speaking of Palantir, we have struck a deal with our partner, M Plus Global. So we told them that, hey, you know, Frankie is a big advocate of Palantir. It would be nice if we can give a free share to our audience as well, one free Palantir share, so that, you know, they can be on board and then we can ride on the journey together. So if you're interested to invest in US stocks, you know, please go to M Plus Global website and you use our link. Our promo code is T30E, right? You type in T30E and, because today is 30th November already. So let me tell you the December deal. So for December, once you open the account and if you bank in 2,000 ringgit, M Plus Global is going to give you one free Palantir share. Simple. Right? So that will be your journey to invest in Palantir together with me. Now, do I still hold the share? Yes, I still do. Why? The reason is very simple. In the third quarter of 2023, Palantir registered their first ever profit in their history. In the past, they have been making losses because it is a small company. They have been growing, so they need to spend a lot of money to invest in a lot of technology and stuff like that. So they have come to a point where their investment is enough and now all they need to do is bring in sales. So the third quarter was the first time they make their first profit. This quarter, they make profit again. And going forward, they have been very aggressive to say that, oh, I'm going to increase my forecast next year in 2024. I think I'm going to do better. Again, my reasoning is very simple. Palantir is a AI big data company, right? If they can't even forecast their own earnings, right, accurately, then where is the confidence for their customer to use their service, right? So if they guide that next year's performance will be a lot better. I have more confidence in that number when I do my own research and analysis after that. So that's my basis for Palantir. So those are the two stocks that has a very big portion in my portfolio. And I've made a video of it. The third one is Microsoft. Microsoft's share price reached record high. I think yesterday also record high, if I'm not mistaken. But to be fair, I didn't know the OpenAI thing is going to happen. I didn't know, you know, Sam Altman is going to be ousted and then there's going to have this drama. All these things, I didn't know. But why I invest in Microsoft is their... How do I put it? Their kanjongness. The urgency that they have into the AI game. Because if you look at the AI structure, right, it's very weird, man. It's not like a typical company where you have the board of directors and the board of directors' objective is to help shareholders to make money. Simple, straightforward. But in OpenAI, the board of directors' objective is not to make money. It's for the benefit of humanity. And even that, right, Microsoft is willing to say, hey, I'm going to throw in $13 billion to invest in this company and bring this AI technology into the company. So, and in this era of ESG investing, you're talking about sustainability and for humanity and all that, right? Suddenly, this Microsoft company, apart from having all the high-tech stuff and having all the cloud business and all that, it has a very strong ESG element that other companies are not that strong suddenly. It's not that they're not good. It's just that Microsoft is willing to invest in a company that is not for profit. Maybe that's going to attract some attention over there. So I put some money over there, but not as much as Palantir and Netflix. But it turned out to be well. So these three stocks that I have made up most of my profit in 2023. In 2024, maybe I want to take away Microsoft, but I haven't decided. But yeah, like I mentioned just now, based on the macro story in 2024, maybe it's time for me to come back to Malaysia because I've made money from my stock investment. I also made some money on Forex exchange as well. And just now I mentioned that, you know, with the excitement in Malaysia, maybe Malaysian ringgit can improve and I don't want to miss that boat. So in the next 1 month or so, I will still try to monitor the situation and see whether I want to make the action or not. So yeah, that is my summary of Market Outlook 2024. I also shared some of my personal experience and journey. I think right now, let's open up the floor for Q&A and I will try to address as much as I can. But while I look through the questions, if you all have anything to ask, you can just write it down there. As I scroll down, I will pick it up. IMF Impossible Mission Force. Very funny. I'm looking into plantation stocks cause CPO price might go up due to El Nino. Okay, these are a little bit technical, no fundamental, but usually, I never say it's confirmed and guaranteed. Usually November and December, CPO price will go up. And the reason for that is because it is just simply not the harvest season, right? But people still buy oil and all that. So somehow, if you look at the trend, November and December are good months for CPO. Now going into 2024, you have all these catalysts of El Nino, which could potentially push the CPO price even higher. I already mentioned just now, price higher is one thing. It is good. It's going to attract speculation. Share price is going to go up. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to whether plantation companies is able to harvest the fruit and sell it at the high price. Because if El Nino is so real that it affects harvest, it's like 1,000 times zero is still zero. You still don't have money. It needs to be 1,000 times one. Then it becomes 1,000, right? So you still need the harvest. So be careful with that. If you are in for trading and speculation, then CPO price go up, you buy, you make money. That's fair. But if you are in for investment because you think that CPO price is going to go up and companies are going to make money, I think you need to be a little bit more careful. Maybe you buy in those states where every day still keep raining one, right? I don't know where because I don't keep track of the weather. Singapore got rain every day this week, but sorry, Singapore got no plantation. RTS link project affect JB real estate. I think it's an indirect impact, but it's a long-term positive for the state. Now, we have already seen how KL growth to be a metropolis when during the time when we started to build the first LRT line, Kelana Jaya line. Then we started to have monorail, and then we have MRT line 1, MRT line 2. Now we are talking about MRT line 3, right? So you can see how Klang Valley grow that way. And to a certain extent, other states also want to implement the same infrastructure development as well. The only problem is all these states don't have enough population like the Klang Valley. Klang Valley got 8 million people, no? So that's close to one third of the whole Malaysia crowding into this one small area. And the other states are a lot fewer people, lah. But if, let's say, with the special financial zone, if you open up the immigration for Singaporeans to come in easier, or if you open up more investments to go to Johor and whatnot, and then you have RTS link, now you're talking about LRTs there, you know, potentially they are going to follow the Klang Valley footstep. And hopefully, one day they are going to be as developed as Klang Valley and be even better. Then, yala, then the real estate there can also be better as well. Iskandar region. The problem with Iskandar region is the oversupply of property. So if got investors faster go and buy up those inventory, then you close the oversupply problem. And then from there, you can see property prices going up. Yeah, many people got burned by Johor property. So yeah, is wait and see. It's a good approach. Any outlook for Capital A? I'm not going to give you outlook for Capital A, but I want to tell you a recent news of Capital A. So our PMX announced that they're going to give 30-day visa free for China and Indian tourists, right? So immediately after the news, AirAsia actually announced 5 million extra seats to cater for this demand. Now, of course, when you do your forecast, right, you don't straight away say, 5 million. If one seat I can sell 100 ringgit, then I'll become, you know, don't know how many, 5 million times 100, there's like 500 million already, right? It's not that easy because there's this thing called the load factor. And if you look at AirAsia's load factor, well, load factor means the number of people loading on a plane. Their historical number is around 80% or so. So when they say they're going to come out with 5 million new seats, I think it's safer to say that it's about how many? About 4 million. 4 million will be taken up and 1 million will be empty. So if you do that calculation, it is still quite impressive. And market is already starting to price in this catalyst already. So if you want to get even more out of it, then you will have to ask yourself whether they are going to increase more flight. That's number one. And number two is whether the load factor can be better. So not 80%, but pump it up to 85 or 90%. Number three, your fuel, your petrol, your jet fuel, whether it is going to be cheap or expensive. So these three are the key things that you need to ask yourselves, and then look back at the share price and see whether it is cheap or expensive. Oh, stock of the year, YTR Power. Yes, I have a lot of friends made a lot of money in YTR Power this year. And BMR Farm Fresh. Oh, thank you. Do you think the Fed will increase the interest rate some more? Statistics says they are unlikely to increase interest rate in December. Their meeting is on the 12th and 13th of December. So if no increase there, then we'll need to wait until next year already. Next year, I don't think they're going to do much increase lah, because inflation also come down already. Ma. And if the inflation comes from food prices, you cannot just increase interest rate to say you want to bring down food prices. One. Because food prices, in order to solve that, you need to harvest more. You need to plant more. So I don't think the Fed is going to increase more interest rate. Crypto outlook in 2024, I don't know how the price is going to move, but next year got Bitcoin halving around April. Would you consider a location of your portfolio into Malaysia dividend stock as a safeguard considering the volatility you mentioned? Yeah, I think I already answered this. Yes, I think part of my strategy is to bring back some money into Malaysia, and yeah, most likely it will be more dividend stocks. How about poultry stocks? Poultry stocks, all these egg stocks, all these chicken stocks, they're doing very well, right? The reason for that is because the feed stocks that all these chicks eat, the prices have come down a little bit from the high. So with lower costs, and if you compare to previous quarter, which is so high, it looks like they are making some money over there. So that's the reason why the share price has been going up. Whether it will continue to go or not, I don't know. You got El Nino, you got food harvest problem, you got food protection problem. Those are some of the concerns. What takes the Bitcoin ETF so long to be approved? US government law. If they approve it, the US dollar's punya dominance will be affected. So they need to be very sure that if they approve it, but it won't affect their economy, it won't affect their currency, or what is the measures that they can take to counter all these cryptocurrencies, then maybe they'll approve it sooner. How about stock pick from Malaysia? Oh, sorry, no stock pick. Oh, by the way, those three stocks that I say is my stock of the year is my stock of the year. They are not stock picks. I need to be very clear. You guys already typed three in the comment box. So it's not investment advice. It's just my experience sharing. I want to be very clear about that. Everyone is traveling to Japan due to low currency rate. Is it good time to buy into Japanese stocks? Also due to Japanese car industry stopping EV cars, is it possible to ride the crash and also Japanese yen recovery? Personally, I have some Japanese investments, but not direct stocks investment. I bought some unit trusts that invest in Japan. The reason I do that is because I don't look at Japanese market, so I'm not very familiar with it. But I have one reason why I buy into that unit trust. If you think about Japanese companies, especially now when Japanese yen is so cheap, right? Because they are a Japanese company, and their currency is so low, the benefit of a low domestic currency, just like Malaysia, is that if you do export business, you make money overseas, and you bring overseas money back to your own country, it will look like you make a lot of money because of that conversion factor. Right? Last time I make $1 in the US, I bring back is $3.80. Today, I bring $1 back to Malaysia, is $4.60. It's the same $1, but it looks like I make more money. Right? So that is the same situation in Japan. So number one, that is the scenario. Number two, Japanese business, a lot of it, they are headquartered in Japan, but most of the business is overseas. When you look at Toyota, Honda, Mitsubishi, all these things, all their business operations are everywhere around the world, which means to say that they transact in US dollar, and when they repatriate all this US dollar back to Japan, it will look like they make a lot of money. So that's the reason why I buy into Japanese stocks through the unit trust. But if you ask me which one is good, which one is bad, I really have no idea because I don't look at Japanese market. But that is the only one reason why I bought into it. Make money or not, I'm not very sure because I haven't go and check. Maybe it did. Yes, Melvin, you are right. One of the reasons why YTL Power is going up is because it could be included into the KLCI component index. And when that happens, all the fund managers will have to buy the stocks to benchmark their portfolio. So it creates that natural demand for the stocks, and then the share price will go up. What's your outlook on EV-related stock? Recently, I read an article saying that all these big companies, all your General Motors and all that, Volkswagen and whatnot, they are actually cutting down their EV production. And they find that actually the EV receptiveness of the market is not so great. It's not as great as they think. I don't know why. Maybe the charging infrastructure is not mature enough. Maybe Japanese is the one that is going to be the end winner, because, you know, they say that EV is not sustainable, but there are other technologies like hydrogen and whatnot. It's more sustainable, and they are trying to develop that kind of EV. So I don't know. But I read somewhere that all these big companies, they're cutting down their EV production. So it is still a wait and see kind of thing for EV. But in the meantime, EV company valuation is also very expensive. So I don't know why you still want to chase it. If anything, you know, take profit, maybe. Tech sector in Malaysia not doing well this year, maybe almost end of tech sector downturn. But I don't see any catalyst in the near term to push up the sector. Care to share more? Okay. Over the long run, tech sector is always a growth sector because of Moore's law that says every 2 years, the number of transistors in a chip is going to double every 2 years. Which means to say, if everything else being equal, a tech company's earnings should also double every 2 years. So 1 become 2, 2 become 4, 4 become 8, 8 become 16, 32, 64, 128. So it's that exponential growth, but that's on a long-term basis. If you're just talking about next year alone, 2024, then the story may be a little bit different because people got no money to spend, right? So people may hold on to their old phones longer, hold on to their old devices longer, and they change later. So maybe the 2024 spending on electronic gadgets will be delayed to maybe towards the end of 2024 or even in 2025. And if that is the case, then maybe there's a slowdown in the tech sector next year. But depending on how you look it, that could be an opportunity for you to accumulate tech stocks in 2024 and prepare for 2025. But if I'm wrong, then you just miss the boat. So whether I'm right or wrong, I also don't know. But I'm just sharing what could be the consequences in both situations. Oh, how do you think the way the government will implement RON 95 target subsidies? You haven't subscribed to my Instagram, right? if you haven't, please go and subscribe to my Instagram, because I talk a little bit about this implementation thing. But I didn't directly point it towards RON 95 subsidy. So what I say that, you know, the government announced to give 100 ringgit E29 to people who earn less than 100,000, right? Starting Monday. So that kind of approach could be one way that the government could use to do targeted subsidy. Because it's very easy for the government to know whether you earn less than 100,000 or not. So if you earn less than 100,000, you go and claim yourself. So there are people who don't claim one, right? The government don't pay, so the government saves some money. But if you go and claim, then you are being targeted by the government to give you subsidy. Then you can use those subsidy to buy sugar, to buy egg, buy chicken, pump petrol. So that could be one way for the government to start this subsidy rationalization. In the meantime, there are still a lot of room for improvement in this strategy if they want to do it that way. Because what if I take the 100 ringgit, but I don't buy chicken, I don't buy egg, but I go and buy cigarette, which is bad for my health, bad for the society, bad for everything. So how do I close the gap? That when I give you the money, you will use the money in the right manner. So that's something for the government to think. Okay, is there any other question? If there's no questions, then I think that's all for today. Thank you so much for staying with me. Not sure whether today's topic will be a little bit heavy or maybe not so relevant to you if you are not investing in the market. But nonetheless, even if you don't, it's very important for you to keep yourself updated with what's going on around the world, because ultimately it will still affect your pocket, right? So what we are trying to do here is to help you to prepare yourself in 2024 so that, we can all live a better quality of life, put it that way, right? So that's all for tonight. Thank you once again for staying with us. Hope to see you guys again next week. All right, see you. Good night. Bye-bye.